Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Arm Radio.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, well, I shouldn't even say weekly, sometimes bi-weekly, sometimes tri-weekly, sometimes once a month. No, we should be back to weekly slash bi-weekly, but thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you. You are your community's finest with a face for radio and a voice for silent movies. My name is Nick Clark, president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well-Armed Radio. And encourage you to be a part of the show with your calls, questions, comments, participation. 563-999-3787 is the studio number. 563-999-3787 will get you on through to the Well-Armed Studio. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. And here we are, February, was it the 20th? A couple weeks off there. I took 1 week off because I was busy. I took another week off. Last week I was going to do a show, and then it was the Super Bowl, and like, I'm not a big sports fan, but I didn't know how many people would be listening, and then ended up not doing a show. So I had a number of good topics come to me this week, so definitely had to have a show. I had to get back here on the internet waves, and I had to get back in the behind the microphone here and talk about a few things and keep some content up there so that the Blog Talk Radio page doesn't go totally stale. It's the Well Armed Radio show on Blog Talk Radio, and of course the Blog Talk Radio page on MeWe, hopefully, which won't be too much longer. Hopefully Trump's new social media platform, which is going live in March, will be launched and it's not going to deal a death knell to Facebook, though it could. I'd say the odds of that are low. I don't think Facebook stock has taken a tumble. The value of Trump's social media company, I won't go through all the details and boring stuff about how they've organized it, but a special purpose acquisition company was created to basically be able to take Trump's social media I guess take public is the right word. It's not a public, because I don't think you can go, don't quote me on this, but I don't think you can go, I think right now it's only open to like accredited investors. I don't think it's something you can just go buy shares in Trump, I think it's Trump TMTG, Trump Media Technology Group. But I've heard that the valuation, and again, this was probably a month ago, so don't quote me if the numbers change, but I think the valuation of the Trump Media Technology Group, which is going to be the company that owns his Truth Social platform, which is going to, you know, I don't know how it's going to be organized. Like Truth Social, is that just the social media piece? There's also going to be, a video platform, which I don't know if they're partnering with Rumble or something. I haven't dove deep into the mechanism of how they're organizing it yet. But what I did hear was that the value of that has grown to because I guess they're selling again shares to these private investors, has grown to, I want to say it was $3 billion and that was like a month ago. It's probably more than that now. So it's just something that the demand is there. The market is there. Facebook, through their censorship, and this happens, Starbucks did this. They literally created a market by their business decisions. Facebook created a market. The Trump social media platform would have had, I don't want to say zero chance of success, but if Facebook had remained a platform, if Facebook had remained a conduit, not a moderated, censored, dictatorial, manipulative, if Facebook had tried to serve its goal of being a social media platform, I don't think there would be any room for Trump's new social media platform. I don't see it having been a huge success. But when Facebook starts manipulating content with their algorithms and censoring people and banning people, I mean, I'm, you know, have my lifetime ban from Facebook in effect. Just the massive censorship, content manipulation, algorithm manipulation, banning people, that created the market for another social media company. It reminds me of like Starbucks. Starbucks created a market for Black Rifle Coffee Company because Starbucks used to be the thing for gun owners. Remember, we used to have open carry get-togethers at Starbucks. I think I have two Toms that listen to the show, one from Lake Geneva and then my friend Tom from Delavan, Whitewater area. So I think I was just going to give a shout out to Tom, who's logged into the chat tonight, and Lon, who's logged into the chat, which if you're listening to the show, you can log into the chat as well if you're on a computer. Otherwise, I will try to keep one eye on the Well-Armed Radio Facebook page. I'm not very good about doing that, but again, I'll try. So if you're watching live, listening live, I should say, and you wanted to interact, you can do it from the chat, or you can also do it from the MeWe.com/p/WellArmedRadio. Great to have you guys in tonight, and appreciate you being here. So, like I was saying, Trump's social media platform was really created, the market was created by Facebook, by Fascist Book. If Fascist Book had been, if they stuck to the core mission, which I don't know if it was ever really their core mission, but if they stuck to their higher cause, their mission of being a social media site, being impartial, being a platform, not a publisher, being a mechanism, not a manipulator. I don't think there would have been any room for Trump's social media group. There wouldn't have been any demand for it. But like I said before, Starbucks created, I think, the market for Black Rifle Coffee Company. Now, Black Rifle Coffee Company isn't a retail operation. They're not a store, a brick and mortar retail operation, I guess I should say, because they are retail. I think they're mostly direct to consumer. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they sell through some other outlets and wholesale, but Well, Starbucks used to be the go-to for gun owners. We used to have our open carry get-togethers there, and Starbucks was kind of famous for standing their ground and letting, you know, respecting the laws of the place where they were. If Starbucks in Chicago, of course, guns aren't allowed. So in Chicago, guns weren't allowed in Starbucks. In Wisconsin, open carry is allowed, so open carry was allowed in Starbucks. And they stuck to that for a while. And then until they didn't. And then once they didn't, then again, that created a market for people like Black Rifle Coffee Company. And it was the focal point of their marketing. You know, why do business with people who don't support your rights? Stop giving your money to companies that don't support your rights. That was their marketing angle. And so in addition to, I think, Black Rifle focused on being veteran owned and really tried to, I guess the conservative, they pushed the took advantage of the conservative side of social marketing. And so again, Facebook, I think if Facebook had stuck to trying to let you, no matter your voice, share your opinion, have a hands-off, certainly maybe something that was violent or illegal. I'm not saying no censorship, no nothing, free for all, but I think Facebook could have kept something like Trump's social media group from popping up. But now because of what's happened, I do think that Trump's social media group, Trump's new social media, Truth Social, is going to be the go-to social media because all the conservatives are going to flock there. And, of course, where conservatives go, I mean, liberals don't like to live in their own stench. And so even though liberals should love fascist book, they'll end up coming over. You know, they're going to want to be where the conservatives are. And so they'll be over on Trump's social media platform, too. So I think that Truth Social, again, I won't go so far and bold as to say it's going to be the death blow for fascist book. But I think it's the start of turning Facebook from a high growth tech company into a what they call in the it's not even a cash cow, but turning it into a I don't think I call it a dog either, but it's the I think the luster is off of Facebook. I think Facebook will the high point of Facebook has passed. And in addition to the fact that I think it will suffer stock price, users, I think they've just destroyed any goodwill that people had. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, and I'm thinking by a couple of years, like, you know, 2016, thinking, you know, it would be terrible not to be on Facebook. It would be terrible. I mean, when suddenly all your friends are on there. Everybody you've known from high school and on, I mean, you reconnected with people you never thought you would have never seen in your life again. Even, you know, you go to high school reunions and maybe you run into some people, but aside from that, just think of all the other people you meet throughout the years. You know, you go to a gym, you go to a new gym, people that you knew from the old gym, you don't see them anymore. Just places that you worked, and then you lose touch with former coworkers. You know, you weren't like buds with them, but you weren't. You know, social media, Facebook allowed you to keep in touch with all those people and not just like in touch, but like know what they were doing. Sometimes know too much about what they were doing. I mean, I don't care what people had for dinner, but that seems what too many people like to put on their social media is their dinner plate. But still, I remember when Facebook came out and I just start reconnecting with all these, because I'd always done that. Like I used to Google my friends like back in like 2006, 2007. I would Google some of my friends like, you know, what became of them? I had friends who wanted to move to Hollywood and become actors. And so I would Google them to see if they, you know, had any success. And all of a sudden Facebook comes along and boom, there you are. But again, most companies go through life cycles. I think Facebook just accelerated theirs. Amongst the younger generation, Facebook has just not caught on. That's a problem for fascist book. And then amongst like the older generation, what Facebook has done with censorship and content manipulation, they've alienated a huge bunch of their user base, but held on to them because right now there's no alternative. But again, I think Trump's social media, Truth Social, is going to be an alternative, and I think it's going to start be the beginning of the end for Facebook. And certainly Facebook's heyday, Facebook's dominance is definitely done, will be done and over with, and we'll see. It may not. I mean, you know, it becomes difficult for companies like that to survive because it's a different kind of mindset. When you're a growing company and you've got all kinds of money coming in, you can just plow money in to research and development, to, you know, improving user experience. But now, I mean, when all of a sudden when growth stops, then it's just being able to maintain and fund this, infrastructure, the behemoth that has become Facebook. You know, you don't have the money to invest in new things, the latest, greatest things. You end up spending the money just to maintain what you have. And then, of course, there's going to end up, you know, things are going to need to be cut because when the growth isn't there, it could very well be that Facebook craters. That wouldn't surprise me. I'm not predicting that, but it wouldn't surprise me. Certainly, Facebook is going to be a dwarf of what it once was. There's no question in my mind about that. Will it go the way of MySpace? I don't know if it'll take that big of a tumble, but it's definitely past its heyday. I had a speaking event this past week, and I thought I'd talk about that a little bit. So I was invited to speak at the Wisconsin Conservative Digest. Bob Dinal is from Wauwatosa. He's had this Wisconsin Conservative Digest. I've been in contact with Bob over the years, just probably by email. I don't think I've ever met him in person. In fact, I'm almost certain I've never met him in person. But maybe I had, and it was years ago, and I just don't remember. My impression of Bob, you know, good guy, but up until recently, I felt like he was very much an establishment kind of Republican. If you ever listen to Jay Weber, WISN talk shows, Bob Dinal he's a frequent caller to the Jay Weber show. I think he's even a frequent caller to the Dan O'Donnell show on WISN. But I would have called him kind of like your establishment party faithful, party sycophant kind of guy. Up until recently, like now, I think I was surprised that it seems like he's supporting Kevin Nicholson. Now, something else I have to share there is we've got another entrant. I got this as a topic here for a little bit, but we've got another entrant into the governor's race that I think really shakes things up, and it shakes things up for me, to be honest with you. You know, Tim Rantham has joined the governor's race, and I'm going to talk about that. I actually talked to Tim. He called me on Friday, or maybe it was Thursday. I think it was Friday. I talked to Tim on the phone and had a good conversation with him. It was Friday. Good conversation with him, and I'll share that with you guys in a minute here too. But the speaking event that I was at, so the Wisconsin Conservative Digest has partnered with Kevin Nicholson and his No Better Friend Corp. I've seen Kevin Nicholson and the Conservative Digest kind of co-marketing some conservative conferences at the new Hampton Inn and Suites in West Dallas, West Milwaukee, right across from State Fair Park. If you're familiar with State Fair Park, just south of State Fair Park, there's a new hotel that's been built. There is a McDonald's south of State Fair Park. I think that this was built on a former Briggs & Stratton property or some kind of foundry property. Maybe it wasn't Briggs & Stratton, but for some reason that stuck in my head. But there, I think there was a foundry, industrial buildings on this land just south of State Fair Park. And now the Hampton Inn and Suites has been built there. So they've had this conference there, the Wisconsin Conservative Digest with Kevin Nicholson's No Better Friend Corp. It may be at least one or two other ones over the past 6 months. And what it is Kevin Nicholson's No Better Friend Corp sponsors it. I assume that they get their funding from a lot of funding from the U-Lines. And so they put on the conference and they have some conservative speakers come, and it's free to attend. You have to register, but it's free to attend. And then I think they cater in lunch at the end of the event. And, you know, I think they've had some pretty good turnout. So I was this one that I went to on Saturday. I was invited to speak. So Chris Lawrence, I'm not sure of his title, but he works with Kevin Nicholson's No Better Friend Corp. And he reached out to me, asked me if I wanted to speak. I said I would, but I said, hey, Chris, I just got to tell you, I'm going to give it to you straight. If you want me to come speak, I will, but I'm not going to pull punches. I'm going to tell people what I think. He goes, nope, that's exactly what we're looking for. We want someone to, because I said, a lot of it's going to be criticism for Republicans. I'm not going to sit there and rah-rah, oh, boo, vote the Democrats out. I'm going to call it like it is. And so I had prepared my comments for that. And then I didn't ask at the time how long I should prepare for. And then as the event gets closer, I see the materials going around, the emails circulating with the other speakers. And they had like speakers, maybe that's 15 speakers, four per hour. So you really got, so you got 15 minutes each. I think it started at 9 a.m. So 9, 10, 10, 11, 11, 12, 12, 12, 1. Yeah, I'd say 12 to 15 speakers, maybe 12. Let's say 12 speakers, because they had some breaks in there. So Kevin Nicholson speaks first. Bob Donovan was there. Let me see if I've got the email here handy, and I can give you a quick rundown of who was there. Kevin Nicholson spoke at 9 a.m. Then next was Henry Tyson. I don't know who that is. Then Brett Healy. I've heard that name. I forgot who that is. Bob Donovan, who just won the primary and is running for Milwaukee mayor. People say that, you know, it's between him and Cavalier Johnson, and that Cavalier Johnson seems like the odds on heavy favorite, but we'll see how that shakes out. I don't believe polling. So Joe Hendrick, don't know him. Matt Sandy, don't know him. Patriots panel, I think they had several people up there. Virginia Pratt, Bonnie Lee, who's with the 1848 group, which is Becky Cleafish's organization. She was invited. Brian Style was supposed to speak right after me at 12:15. Then it got shuffled around. I know Brian Style got moved to early in the day. And then after me at 12:15, so I prepare my notes for this thing. And in my notes, one of the things I'm talking about is how you can thank Scott Fitzgerald for, you know, I talk about Republicans with A-plus NRA ratings, and that they're the ones that you can thank for not having more gun rights here in Wisconsin. And then the day before, Tommy Thompson was scheduled as a speaker, and he had to cancel. I don't know if he withdrew or they, but he got bumped because Tommy Thompson was supposed to speak right before me, and then former Governor Tommy Thompson. And then the day before the event, or maybe the Thursday, it was the event on a Saturday or Thursday, the email goes around to all the speakers, and guess who's right after me? I'm at 12 o'clock, 12:15, and then guess who's right after me? Scott Fitzgerald. So here I'm literally going to start Scott Fitzgerald bashing in my comments to this conference. And one of the people, so, you know, and I'm an asshole, but I'm not a jerk. So I did alter my commentary, and instead of calling him out by name, I just said Republican leadership and when I made my comments. So, but basically what I talked about is I went to this conference and I talked about my message to, and I only had 15 minutes. I originally had a much larger, something I was planning for like 45 minutes to an hour that I could have spoken. And I was going to go through really the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms in 2022 and talking about how did we get here to where we're at here today. I had this, I don't think I'll run through it all because, again, I think it would take me a half hour, and I don't know if I want to spend that much of the show on it. But if I was to summarize real quick, how did we get here? I was going to talk about the Walker-Newman primary, how they both said they'd support constitutional carry. Keith Gilkes, talked to him from Walker's campaign, talked to Mark Newman over the phone, voice to voice, not face to face, but person to person. He said for sure he would support constitutional carry. Talked to Keith Gilkes, Walker's campaign manager. And I posed it. I said, if we can get it to Scott's desk, will he sign it? Keith Gilkes said, no brainer. That's an easy yes. If you get to his desk, he'll sign it. And then Scott Walker goes on TV. When we did get constitutional carry to the floor of the Senate, when we did have the Madison newspapers saying that constitutional carry had the inside track, Scott Walker goes on TV and he says, any bill that makes it to my desk must have mandatory training and a permit. If I have to have a driver's license to ride my Harley, you should have a license and mandatory training to carry a gun. Talk radio in Milwaukee, except for Vicki McKenna, threw it all under the bus. Darren Lasorte, the NRA liaison at the time, himself in an interview on NRA TV said that talk radio in Milwaukee killed constitutional carry. He said after talk radio came out against it, which was what he didn't want to say, was Scott Walker killed it, because the NRA won't say that. The NRA is not going to bash Scott Walker. But the NRA did come out and bash talk radio. But the only reason talk radio came out so hard against constitutional carry was because they heard Scott Walker come out against it. And they were just dutifully following. I'm not saying they were getting talking points, because I don't think the Republicans are that organized like the Democrats are. But I do think that the Republicans hear these things that Scott Walker said, and dutifully, except for Vicky McKenna, picked up the torch and said, oh, we're gonna advocate for a shall issue permit system. Charlie Sykes was the biggest offender. He went off on constitutional carry, called us all the kook fringe, named me by name, said I was a hack, which was kind of a proud moment, and especially seeing what's happened with Charlie Sykes and how he's revealed himself to be the establishment, deep state, country club, never Trumper kind of Republican, quote Republican, rhino Republican in name only, RBNC Republican, but not conservative, as Charlie Sykes has revealed himself to be. I kind of take pride in the fact that I ruffled his feathers so much back in 2011. Every bill since then, except Castle Doctrine, we've gotten chop locked on. I talked to when I spoke to the group in West Dallas this past Saturday about how the Second Amendment is a 75-25 issue. And I can say that because in 1998, the referendum for Article 1, Section 25 to amend the state constitution was passed by like 74.7% of the vote. So we're generally in general, gun rights are a 75-25 issue. I was going to talk about how the Second Amendment will not protect our gun rights, that we have to win the cultural war. I've talked about this on our show before here on Well Armed Radio, starting with the truism that guns are cool, and there's probably no single invention more responsible for the United States of America than guns. Guns in the hands of pilgrims fed the pilgrims and protected the pilgrims. Guns in the hands of the average citizen secured our independence from England. Guns in the hands of settlers provided the protection and the food to settle our vast country from east to west, and then guns in the hands of ordinary people, the infantry, enlisted men, our country's sons and young men delivered the world from tyranny in the world wars. And then to this day, guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens save lives. So the fact of the matter is guns are cool, and our country owes its existence to guns in the hands of law-abiding people, citizens, not governments and armies. Our country wouldn't exist without guns in the hands of citizens. And we should be proud of that, and we should teach it. And the fact of the matter is that 99% of legislators are not innovators. They don't push the envelope. They don't come up with groundbreaking ideas. By their very nature of needing popular support, they wait until they think an idea has popular support to embrace it legislatively. And I've compared this to civil rights and gay rights. The Civil Rights Act came at the end of the cultural shift that had already occurred. And that's why I always say legislation doesn't start a cultural shift. It follows a cultural shift. Gay rights strategy, talked about this in the show before. Gay rights strategy lost at every turn. Gay rights back in the 80s and 90s, gay rights lost in the court of public opinion, lost at the ballot box, lost in court. The Defense of Marriage Act was enacted, signed by a Democrat, Bill Clinton. And what did the Democrats do after losing at every level and even having the Defense of Marriage Act be passed? Well, they went about winning the cultural war. The gay rights crowd went about putting gay characters in television shows. First, it was gay characters in television shows to get sympathetic characters that people liked. Then it was putting gay shows about gay and the gay lifestyle, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, gay pride parades that they didn't apologize for. You know, it was just so they won the cultural war in media, in entertainment. They won the cultural war. And so once the cultural war was won, then they came back around and look at what happened to the Defense of Marriage Act. Again, this isn't an opinion on gay rights. You can, I'm for equal rights, not favoritism. And I think that gay rights is more about money. I won't get off in the weeds on that. But again, no matter what you think about gay rights, they lost at every turn, every legal turn, and the court of public opinion, and they turned around and they went about making a cultural change. And then once the cultural change was in place, then you have politicians falling over themselves to support gay rights. You have a conservative Supreme Court overturning DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, and boom, they defeat the gay rights crowd won the issue. So for the Second Amendment, we got to win the cultural war. We have to be proud of our heritage of guns and the current value that guns bring to our society today. I did say this. I said to the crowd on Saturday, I said, the Second Amendment is not obsolete. The Second Amendment is as important as ever. And if you didn't think so 2 years ago after all the riots of 2020 and then now the explosion of crime, if you didn't think that the Second Amendment was more crucial now than ever, this was your wake-up call. 2020 riots were your wake-up call. I also said to the crowd on Saturday, to the audience on Saturday, that the market research is in. I said, stop paying attention to the Marquette poll. And then I told a story about Ron Tussler. I didn't call Ron Tussler by name, but about a legislator in the Fox Valley who's got a Republican district who would be on Facebook right after the Marquette poll comes out, sparring with his conservative constituents about why he wouldn't be more conservative and citing the Marquette poll's lack of support for a conservative type issue as the reason. And I thought, my God, here's a first off, forget the Marquette poll. They never call me. They ever call you. I mean, who knows who they're even calling? We shouldn't put any credence in these polls. But even if you did, that's a statewide poll and not a poll of Ron Tussler's legislative district, which is a conservative district. So you would expect that the results of Ron should be representing the opinions of his constituents in his district instead of representing the opinions. He's not running for statewide office. First off, you shouldn't concern yourself with which way the political winds appear to be blowing in the media. You should concern yourself with what's doing what's right. I said that to the audience on Saturday. I said, for Republicans, you'll never win chasing polls or chasing Democrat, being Democrat light. You've got to do the right thing and prove the concept. Trump proved that freedom works. Conservative policies work. Implement them. They will succeed. And then people will vote for you because what you did worked. You aren't going to win the battle in terms of getting the media to look favorably upon you. It'll never happen. The media is always going to be against a conservative. But what you can do is prove the concept. And I said, the market research is in. Every time there's a crisis, they vote with their pocketbooks and they go and buy guns. And look at what happened in 2020. Look at what happened after September 11th. People went and bought guns. Look at what happens after some of these major mass shootings and stuff. People go and buy guns. Look at what happens after Sandy Hook. People go and buy guns and stock up on ammunition. Look at what happens after all this stuff. People go and buy guns. Look at what happens after the riots of 2020 in Kenosha. People go flock to buy guns. Here in Wisconsin, a friend of mine in Tosa who's got a wife who really didn't want guns in the house, never wanted guns in the house. And after the riots in Kenosha, and then they start rioting up in Wauwatosa, she said to her husband, we need to get a gun. It makes sense to people. The market research is there. People voted with their pocketbooks. The Second Amendment is more relevant than it's ever been before. I made that point to the audience on Saturday. And so then I talked about everything that the Republicans are trying to pass right now, constitutional carry. We could have had constitutional carry back in 2011 if Scott Walker wouldn't have shafted it. We could have had constitutional carry in 2018 when Senator Craig's bill was up. We had a Republican governor, Republican Senate, Republican Assembly. We got the bill out of committee, and it sat on Scott Fitzgerald's desk and never got called for a vote. So now they are pushing through. I don't know if constitutional carry has moved forward, but all the other bills, the school grounds carry, the bill to drop the age to right to carry down to 18, that's been passed through both of those on a voice vote. And so now that there's a Democrat governor who's going to veto the hell out of them, we've talked about this in the show before. I don't need to run through that whole scenario again. Now the Republicans are all big, tough, and pro-gun, just like at the congressional level, U.S. Congress, they pass an Obamacare repeal when Obama was president, and then when Trump was president and would have signed it, Obama vetoed it, of course. When Trump was president and he would have signed it, they couldn't even get a skinny repeal up to the press, to the Oval Office. I mean, that's the same kind of stuff. The Republicans try to play politics, and that's the thing. Republicans will never win the political game The Democrats are too sly for that. They have the media on their side. The Republicans can only win by doing conservative stuff and letting conservative policy result in positive change, which people will notice. And that's exactly what Trump did. Trump wasn't a genius. He just, again, freedom works. He reduced regulations. Businesses knew what to expect. They knew they weren't going to get some crazy draconian stuff coming down the pipe. And they did their thing. And the economy soared. Again, Trump wasn't a genius per se. He was just willing and he wasn't compromised to where he could do these things. He didn't have donors and people that were he did have senators coming saying, oh, don't do this, don't do that. And he did it anyway, and it was the right thing. And the economy soared. And so that's what we have to do as conservatives. I made the point to the audience on Saturday that concealed carry, all these Republicans that sit there and worship the Marquette Law School poll, concealed carry, forget the fact that they shouldn't, because that's not their constituency. That's some supposed statewide constituency. But the concealed carry did not have majority support in the Marquette Law School poll when it was passed in 2011. And Republicans didn't care. They passed it anyway. And did anybody, despite the media histrionics and, oh, going to be Wild West shootouts, fender benders turning into shootouts, all this stuff, no Republicans lost their seat because of supporting concealed carry. In fact, Democrats voted for concealed carry. Lena Taylor voted for it. And there was, I think, a couple others as well. The gun bills were some of the most bipartisan bills that passed. Act 10 was very partisan, but the gun bills, Castle Doctrine, had Democrats too. The gun bills were some of the most bipartisan bills that passed. And yet here we have now Republicans that are so afraid to pass pro-gun bills back in 2018. I mean, it's just, we don't lose our gun rights to Democrats. We lose our gun rights to squishy Republicans. We don't have Democrats to blame for not getting more gun rights restored. We have soft Republicans to blame. I made this point on Saturday at the conference. I said that during campaign season, Republicans are like the second coming of Charlton Heston. And during legislative session, they tuck tail and make excuses why they can't pass gun bills. And they literally use the gun vote. And that's what they're doing right now. They're using the gun vote. They're trying to say, oh, look at Tony Evers vetoing these gun bills, when Republicans are the ones that scuttled those same gun bills 3-4 years ago. And 3.5 years ago. We see right through it. So anyway, that was Saturday's event. Went really well. I got a really good ovation, a really good round of applause and shouts and hollers when I was done. And then up after me walks Scott Fitzgerald. So that was Saturday. A couple other things I was going to share with you guys. Menominee Falls, just some info here. Menominee Falls, a while back, maybe a month ago, maybe a little bit more, someone contacted me, their son, I believe it was son, I don't think it was daughter, their student, I think it was a son, was wearing a Let's Go Brandon shirt to school, and the school made the student take the shirt off. The parent didn't think that was within the school's authority. So not being a gun issue, Wisconsin Carry couldn't fund it. It wouldn't have been right for us to fund that issue. But I did pass the information along to our attorney, who does some kinds of work like this for contingencies. And he took the case and he let me know, Mr. Monroe let me know, I think it was on Friday, that Menominee Falls has relented, settled the lawsuit. So the student that wanted to wear the Let's Go Brandon shirt to school can now continue to wear the Let's Go Brandon shirt to school up in Menominee Falls. And I don't know the amounts, wasn't privy to that, but I'm certain that the district had to pay the filing fees for the lawsuit. Attorney Monroe was made whole for his time. Perhaps there was some additional monies for a settlement. I don't know. And when I say additional money is paid to the parent of the student for the, pain and suffering of having to have your rights violated again. Maybe not. Maybe the only thing was the attorney's fees were paid and the students allowed to wear the shirt. I don't know the details of the settlement. I'm certain that the attorney's fees were paid and that the student was allowed to wear the shirt. I don't know if there was any additional monies beyond that. But that was Menominee Falls. Lawsuit filed and lawsuit settled. Victory for free speech up in Menominee Falls. Next one I was going to talk about was some politics of the Olympics. You know, I've said this before, and you know, a lot of people, I love the Olympics. It's something that when I was a kid, we only got to watch, you know, like an hour of television per night and only certain types of things. We couldn't watch any comedies or anything with a laugh track. We weren't allowed to watch that. Nothing that was like violent or anything per se. But my mom, so we could watch like, well, when Little House on the Prairie was still a show, we could watch that. We could watch like Highway to Heaven. We could watch MacGyver. We could watch the A-Team, which was sometimes a little bit violent, but my mom let us watch the A-Team. We could watch, what was it, Airwolf? That was the show with the helicopter. We could watch, when I was really, really little, like BJ McKay and I forget if that was the name of the show, if it was BJ McKay, but it was BJ McKay and his best friend, Bear. That's the trucker with the monkey, the chimp. We could watch that. Greatest American Hero we could watch. So some of those kind of more mainstream shows. But when the Olympics came on, we could only watch 1 hour of TV a night. But when the Olympics came on, we could watch at least 2 hours of TV. Maybe it was more. But we could watch a lot of TV when the Olympics was on because it's only once every 4 years. And so I really remember just as a kid sitting around the TV, our little TV as a family watching the Olympics. And it was really cool. So I love the Olympics, super love the Olympics, summer games, winter games, love them both. So even though now people are like, oh, the Olympics and all the woke bullshit, which is totally true, I still love the Olympics. And so I still watch. But so Eileen Gu is a freestyle skier, and it was one of the first events I watched. And so the analysts that are covering this, her first like slope style, which you come down a slope and you go over a jump and you do, or a couple jumps, you go over, there's like rails at the top, so you go off of like, it's kind of like skateboarding on the snow, but with skis. So you got these, you go over rails and then little jumps, and then there's some big jumps and as you make your way down the hill. So this Eileen Gu, so this chick is competing for, China. The announcers are making this big stinking deal about Eileen Gu. And then you start watching her package. That's where they kind of introduce, you know, they pause from the competition and go, and then that she's in her hometown and with her family and training at her home. The chick's from California. She's born and raised in San Francisco. Her father was born and raised in America. Her mother was born in China. But so here's Eileen Gu, an American, born and raised in California, went to high school there, trained there. She's going to be going to Stanford. She's got, you know, I don't know if she's some social media influencer as well, but she's a really good freestyle skier. She decides to go compete for communist China, a country where her lifestyle that she has here in the United States would never be allowed. I mean, and this kind of stuff just makes me so mad. And I've observed this for years, that these people that are competing for other countries, I would say half of them live and train in the United States. And they've lived and trained in the United States for the majority of their life. And these are young, you know, most of these athletes are younger. But what you name it, whether it's, you know, track and field, you look at the track and field stars for Jamaica, for, you know, wherever, a lot of them live in the United States, train in the United States, and have lived in the United States. Their current permanent residence is in the United States. Some of them were born in other countries. And so I even found that, I always thought, look, you should have to live, if you don't live half your, you know, 60% of your time isn't spent in the country that you're competing for, then you can't compete for them. If you live in the United States and you train in the United States, you should have to compete for the United States. Of course, the problem there is you realize, I'd say, only probably about 25%, it seems, of, I'm guessing, and it varies by sport and varies by winter versus summer. But I'll bet you in some instances, you'd probably have only 25% of the athletes from other countries that could be competing for those countries. Everybody be competing for the United States because everybody, like some of these snowboarders, oh, he's competing for Canada. Nobody lives in Park City, Utah. You know, it just, that's always bothered me. But Eileen Gu really bothers me because she goes to compete for communist China that, you know, she's born in the United States. She's an American citizen. Her dad was born in the United States. One parent, her mother was born in China, but now lives in the U.S. and has for many, many, many years. She decides to compete for communists for the Chi-Coms. And you know what it is? She was probably paid off the Chi-Coms because they're so interested, just like the Russians. They're so interested in the allure and the propaganda value, the prestige of having a Olympic champions to elevate their country's stature. I'm sure she was paid millions by the Chi-Coms to compete for China. But I think she should be embarrassed for herself. She should be, I mean, that she's like a traitor to her country. And then she says, oh, that she's connecting a sport. You know, she's connecting. She wants to inspire young girls in China. But she's really just a propaganda pawn for the communists. And I just have zero respect for that. I when she was doing her event, I was like, I said to my fiance, we were texting back and forth. I said, I hope she falls. I know that sounds terrible. But like, look, if you're from China, compete for China, great. If you're from the United States, compete for the United States. It's your home country. Now, again, I know she lives in California, which is, seems like it is a country of its own. But I just, I don't know. I that stuff really gets under my skin, this Eileen Gu chick. Next thing I was going to talk about, Tim Rantham, Representative Tim Rantham, enters the governor's race. I talked about this online. I don't think I've talked about it because I haven't had a show since Tim Rantham entered the governor's race. This is a game changer. It's a game. Honestly, I mean, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to support in the primary Tim Rantham. I'm really like an anybody but Cleefish kind of guy. When Tim announced last week, not this past Saturday, Saturday before up in Keewaskum, we end up driving through Keewaskum almost every Saturday because we go to the Northern Kettle Moraine every Saturday afternoon to hike with the dog. Just love it up there. And then every once in a while, we go to the Southern Kettle Moraine, but usually we drive to Northern Kettle Moraine and hike up there. But every once in a while, we drive out to, you know, Devil's Lake, Merrimack area, Lodi, and hike the Ice Age Trail out there as well. But we're driving through Keewaskum, and I was like, oh, I was hoping I could find where Tim Rantham was having his event because I wanted to stop by and give my card to one of his handlers. But so I got home. Tim Rantham announced he was running for governor. I went on the website, you know, donate $500 and sent him a message, said, hey, love to connect with you. So I got a call from Tim on Friday. And here's my thing. My first thing, I think Cleefish would be a disaster. I think if Cleefish gets elected governor, then Robin Voss continues to be the most powerful person in the state. And we all know what a roadblock to freedom Robin Voss has been. I was supporting Kevin Nicholson. If it was Nicholson and Cleefish, I would be wholeheartedly supporting Kevin Nicholson because I do think Nicholson will challenge the establishment and he's an outsider. But here's the thing with Tim Rantham. Tim Rantham, he's proven that he will stand up to Robin Voss in office. That combined with the fact that he's got billionaire backing as well. I'm pretty sure that Mike Lindell, the owner of the MyPillow company, I'm pretty sure he's a billionaire as is. So here's what you got, the battle of the billionaires. You got Becky Cleefish, who's being supported by Diane Henricks from Beloit. She's a billionaire. Then you got Kevin Nicholson, who's being supported by Dick and Liz Uline, who own Uline Corporation down in Kenosha, Pleasant Prairie, billionaires. I'm pretty sure they're billionaires. And then now you've got Tim Rantham, who's supported by Mike Lindell, the CEO of the MyPillow company. And then a couple other big names were supporting him as well. I forget them off the top of my head, but here's the thing. This primary, my prediction is it's going to come down to Trump's endorsement. I think that if Tim Rantham can get a solid foothold, I believe that he will get Trump's endorsement. And then I believe that Trump's endorsement will get Tim Rantham the primary victory over Kevin Nicholson and Rebecca Cleefish. I think if Tim Rantham, Trump's got to endorse in this race. And if Trump, If Trump wanted to support Becky Clefish, he would have already done it. So it's clear to me that Trump doesn't want to support Becky Clefish. Kevin Nicholson hasn't been announced for too long. And I don't know if maybe Trump's people have reservations about Kevin Nicholson or Trump's people just don't know Kevin Nicholson or the U-lines well. But I think that it seems to me like Tim Rantham is probably going to get Trump's endorsement. And I think that that will probably propel him to a victory in the primary. If he doesn't, if Trump does not endorse in the primary, that might be problematic. I don't know if WISN Talk Radio will sit here and try to handicap this race and say that if Tim Rantham is going to cut into Kevin Nicholson's support because they're both like anti-establishment, which seems to me like just validating everybody's claim that Becky Clefish is the establishment. So can we just take that as a given now? Talk radio, because they say, well, some say that Becky Clefish is too close to the establishment, but that's not, she was an independent person. The lieutenant governor was elected separately. Becky Clefish wasn't the first choice for lieutenant governor, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, they keep trying to hedge with Becky on WISN Talk Radio, and I'm just not buying it. I mean, she's as establishment gets, and I think the talk radio should just be flat out and be like, yeah, I mean, Becky Clefish is the establishment. That's where all her support comes from. So I think the thought right now is that, look, if 50% of people were going to vote for Kevin Nicholson and 50% of people were going to vote for Becky Clefishy, now Tim Rantham gets in the race, and the logical analysis that they're putting out there is that, well, Tim Rantham is going to cut into Kevin Nicholson's support. So the 50% of people that were going to support Kevin Nicholson, now 25% support Kevin Nicholson, 25% support Tim Rantham, and Becky gets her 50%. Boom, she wins the primary. Again, I think it's all going to come down to Trump's endorsement. If Trump endorses, which I think if Trump was going to, I just don't think Tim Rantham would have gotten in the race if he didn't think he was going to get Trump's endorsement. And so I don't want to share the content of the conversation that I had with Tim Rantham, but so I'm sharing my thoughts based upon my own logical musings, not on things that were shared with me, but that's my logical musings. I don't think that Tim Rantham would have gotten in the race if he didn't think he would get Trump's endorsement. I think if Trump had wanted to endorse Clefishy, he would have done it, cleared the field, early on, even before Nicholson announced. So yeah, that's my prediction, Tim Rantham. And I've talked to Tim and I just really like him as a human being. I like him as a person. He's already proven that he's willing to stand up to, Robin Voss and the leadership in Madison. And that's what we need. And so he's a good guy, and talking to him, he's a genuine guy, and I like him. I've only talked to him on the phone once, but speaking of this primary race and Trump, so WISN, sometimes it's so hard to listen to conservative talk radio. I had to stop listening to during a primary. I had to stop listening to conservative talk radio back in the Nicholson Vukmir primary because I was so incensed with how talk radio is bashing Kevin Nicholson and just pumping up for Leah Vukmir so pathetically back in 2018. But so I'm watching WISN. Dave Michaels is a fill-in host. Dave Michaels is a producer at the station. I think he produces Dan O'Donnell's show. So he's the call screener for Dan O'Donnell's show. And then Dave Michaels also fill-in host because now Mark Belling no longer does Fridays, the Friday afternoon drive. Mark Belling is only on 4 days a week. So then the Friday show is now done by a rotating schedule of, I forget the news guy from WISN, but something Brennan. I forget it. Sorry. But And then Dave Michaels fills in, and then sometimes Jerry Bott fills in. So, and then sometimes Dan O'Donnell does the Friday show as well. So that Friday afternoon slot from like 3 to 6, which is Mark Belling's slot Monday through Thursday, is a Benjamin Yount. That's it. Benjamin Yount is the one. He does news for WISN Talk Radio, and he also is a fill-in host, and he often does the Friday show, the Friday afternoon drive. So Dave Michaels is filling in on the Friday afternoon show, and he's sitting here telling the audience, and this is what talk radio, I think, makes such a huge mistake. During the primary election in 2016, Rush Limbaugh navigated this masterfully. Rush Limbaugh navigated the primary where some people were supporting Jeb Bush, not many, but some people were supporting Jeb Bush, and some people were supporting Ted Cruz, and some people were supporting Donald Trump. And I forget who else. Scott Walker was in the race. I mean, so what Rush Limbaugh did during the 2016 primary season is, instead of picking sides, he explained Donald Trump to the audience. He shared the feelings of his audience members with the broader audience. He shared what Trump voters liked about Trump. He shared what appealed to Trump with certain voters. He shared what appealed with voters to Ted Cruz. And in that, he was the voice of his audience. He was sharing the opinions of his audience on the air for the other people of the audience to understand. He was not trying to tell people who to support. He was not trying to tell people who they should support in the primary. He was not trying to steer people to supporting Ted Cruz over Donald Trump. He didn't see that as his role. Well, here we have Dave Michaels, the pretty much just fill-in host on WISN. He's doing the, and Dan O'Donnell's been guilty of this too now, trying to be like, oh, he's the, saying how they want the primary to go, saying how they don't want the primary. What I don't want, Dan O'Donnell, what I don't want to happen is the primary to turn into a big bloodbath. Well, Dan, we don't care what you want. It shouldn't be about what you want, Dan. Start thinking about what your audience wants, not what you want. Stop trying to be a preacher and start trying to be a voice of your audience. So I find that super annoying that talk radio is always trying to play kingmaker in the primary elections, in Republican primaries. The general election, have at it. You know, do your – but in a Republican primary, I think that these talk show hosts, conservative talk show hosts, should channel Rush Limbaugh and not just be objective and unbiased, but explain – use their time to explain why Trump is so appealing to such a large segment. Explain the reasons why Kevin Nicholson would be in local talk radio. Explain why Kevin Nicholson would be so supported by so many people. Explain why people would say that Rebecca Clefish is establishment. Explain where Rebecca Clefish is, why people support her. They have that confidence that she's, a lot of voters find that sense of comfort in someone that has been in the party game for a long time. So instead, what I'm hearing from the Dan O'Donnells of the world is trying to play kingmaker, trying to be the referee, trying to decide, trying to be the arbiter of what was legit, being the fact checker of the primary election, which again, I just don't think should really be their role. But then Dave Michaels comes on a Friday afternoon, and he starts talking about Donald Trump, and he says, you know, Republicans have been doing really well. More people identify as a Republican now in like the blank ballot, like, do you identify more as a Republican or Democrat? And in the polling, more people identify as a Republican now than ever before. And, the Virginia governor's race, Glenn Youmkin, I mean, yeah, he was endorsed by Trump, but he really made that campaign about other things. And then Dave Michaels, like, you know, this is just some tough love for the audience. The party is doing well without Trump at the head of it. And he's like, you know, I thought to myself, my God, Dave, like, it just drives me nuts when Republicans want to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And so here's Dave Michaels, the fill-in host on WISN, preaching to his audience with some tough love that Donald Trump, like, he's essentially trying to say that that the reason that Republicans are doing so well right now is because Donald Trump isn't the head of the party, because Donald Trump isn't the leader of the movement, because, you know, the conservative movement is bigger than Trump. And he's like, you know, just some tough love for the audience. And I'm like, Dave, shut the F up. First off, Trump won his race. And Dave Michaels is like, that's why, you know, no matter what you thought of the election, you know, Trump lost. And then later on, he's like, you know, Trump lost. I'm like, no, actually, Dave, we all think that Trump won. And we all think that Trump won in actually massive numbers. It would have been, an electoral landslide if not for the cheating. And so his whole line that somehow the reason that Republicans are doing so well, the reason that Glenn Youngkin won in Virginia, is not because of Trump, but because of, you know, that just this movement towards conservatism, but not towards Trump. I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. When I have 70-year-old ladies, when I put up a flag in front of my house that says Trump won, I know it, you know it. And I got 70-year-old ladies from down the street at there's some upscale 55 and older apartments down the street from me. 70-year-old ladies walking by my house, ringing my doorbell at 8 o'clock at night on a Monday during the summer. Oh, I'm sorry to bug you. I just wanted to tell you I love your flag. And then I'm out in front of my house getting ready to jump on my motorcycle, jump on my bike to go for a bike ride. And another 70-year-old lady that's walking by. I walk by every day because I wanted to tell the person who lived here that I love your flag. And this is my Trump One flag. 70-year-old ladies. You know, so Dave Michaels says that Trump isn't, that there's not this support for Trump out here. I think he's smoking medical marijuana. And so pushing that false narrative out to your audience, to your supposedly conservative audience as a supposedly conservative talk show host, again, I think is trying to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. I can't let it bother me because, let's be honest, Donald Trump, if he decides to run, and we all know he's going to, Donald Trump will win the Republican nomination. The only reason I don't say he'll win the next presidency is because we have no idea if the margin of fraud will be overcome. We'd like to think it will be. But Donald Trump will win. Donald Trump was able to win the Republican nomination when all the Never Trumpers and everybody else and talk radio hated him back in 2016. He overcame all that to win the Republican nomination. If he overcame that, then he's certainly going to overcome whatever if, you know, Kristi Noem and Paul Ryan and whoever else try to support a candidate outside of Donald Trump, he's going to steamroll the primary. So when all these, when Dave Michaels is sitting here saying, there's some tough love, you know, Trump's not the cat's meow anymore. He's not the, you know, the Republicans are doing well without Trump. Like he's kind of like Dave Michaels came up with some prescient genius observation, which is just a bunch of bullshit. I thought that was just so infuriating for talk radio to be preachy and condescending. When you tell your audience, you know, some tough love. I mean, look, we're not your kids. Like, tough love is what you give to your kids. You know, Dave Michaels, we are not your kids. Your audience is not juveniles. They don't need your tough love, Dave. What they could use and what they tune into, this is why people have tuned into Rush Limbaugh. They call them ditto heads because Rush said what they wanted to say. So when Dave Michaels comes on and preaches to his audience and says, I know a lot of you don't want to hear it, and, you know, I'm going to get the hate mail for it or the snark, you know, that you're people that listen to Rush Limbaugh call themselves ditto heads because Rush said stuff and they were like, ditto. That's exactly how I feel. When people aren't saying ditto to you, Dave Michaels or Dan O'Donnell, it's because you are not expressing the voice of your conservative audience. When Dan O'Donnell bashes Kyle Rittenhouse and says, well, it was self-defense, but he should have never been there. He made it worse. He went looking for trouble. He should have, you know, and then he hears from his audience for it. This new generation of talk radio seems to think that talk radio is where you get to impose your opinion on other people. And that is not what made Rush Limbaugh the most popular radio host in the history of mankind. What made Rush Limbaugh the most popular radio host in the history of mankind is because he expressed the views of his audience on his show. The things that his audience wanted to say but didn't have the voice to say it, Rush Limbaugh said it to 36 million people. The things that the audience members felt but maybe couldn't articulate as well as Rush Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh put words to their feelings. And that's why they loved him. And that's why they listened to him. And so this new generation of talk show hosts, your Dan O'Donnells, your Dave Michaels, who's just a fill-in host, who think that they're doing great radio by preaching to their audience and dictating to their audience and thinking that they're teaching their audience something. That's not what made and in Rush Limbaugh expressing the opinions of his audience members with a platform that they didn't have and articulating the beliefs and opinions of the audience members more succinctly than they could, he endeared themselves to them. And then that gave him the ability to share information that he had. So when Rush Limbaugh would come out and support, this is during the general election and Donald Trump gets that Billy Bush tape dropped, the October surprise dropped. And Trump says things like, and Rush Limbaugh says things like, this is a dirty tactic, needs to be ignored, needs to be, just what. Then he has, when you have the respect and admiration is not really the word, but the respect and confidence your audience has in you, then you can share information. And that does change people's opinions and it does move people. Trump never expressed the opinions of Rush Limbaugh never expressed the opinions of liberals on his show. He told you how liberals thought and then said, don't doubt me on this. But he never preached to his audience members in a condescending, I'm smarter than you kind of way. Next thing I was going to talk about tonight, Remington settles a lawsuit. Super troubling. Remington settles a lawsuit. Remington was sued because they were the maker of the firearm that Adam Lanza used to shoot up Sandy Hook Elementary School back in 2012 or whatever that was. And this is what's so troubling about this lawsuit to me. So again, it's a settlement, not a loss in court. I want to say it was like $73 million or something like that. But so federal law provides immunity for firearm manufacturers when guns are used in illegal activities. Now, Connecticut law gets around that federal law by saying that the gun was marketed to young men prone to violence. So Connecticut is saying that even though federal law gives immunity to firearm manufacturers when their guns are used in illegal activities, in essence, and I think the courts have already did rule on this part of it, the lawsuit can move forward because the Connecticut law isn't seeking to punish Remington because their gun was used in an illegal activity. It was because of how they marketed the gun. And that's why the lawsuit was allowed to move forward. So that's how this Connecticut law gets around this federal statute that provides immunity for firearm manufacturers by saying that the gun was marketed to young men prone to violence. And then they cited some advertisements that said, man card reissued for the Remington version of the AR-15 or something like that. Here's why I can't fathom how these plaintiffs in Connecticut, the Sandy Hook parents, had standing is because the only reason the Connecticut law is being allowed to be enforced, the only reason that lawsuit was being allowed to move forward and that the Remington didn't have immunity was because it wasn't that their gun was used for an illegal act. It was that how they marketed the gun. And so that's this workaround to the immunity, so that you're immune from how your products are used, but you're not immune for how you market your products. But I still can't understand why the plaintiffs have standing, because Adam Lanza didn't buy his gun. Adam Lanza's mom bought the gun, and then Adam Lanza killed his mom and stole her gun. Adam Lanza was 17. So how can plaintiffs, these Sandy Hook parents, claim that the marketing of this Remington gun was directed at young at-risk of violence males? How can they claim that that was a factor when Adam Lanza didn't buy his gun? His mom did. She's not young. She's not a male. Marketing is how a gun is sold. Marketing is how you attract buyers. The buyer, his mom, wouldn't have been attracted to marketing that appealed to young, violence-prone men. Now, I reject that on its face anyway, the saying man card reissued appeals to young, violent men. But even if you accept that that man card reissued would drive a young man to buy this gun and use it illegally, Adam Lanza didn't buy the gun. His mom did. So again, I still can't see how the Sandy Hook parents have standing to sue and avoid the immunity because, well, and again, the immunity applies to the gun being used in illegal activity. I guess the immunity doesn't apply to the marketing. And even though I think the marketing angle, they shouldn't have standing, it still doesn't, you know, that doesn't fall under the immunity portion. So, you know, and then that's why Remington settles, because they think it's going to be better to settle than to risk what a jury in Connecticut would do. I mean, And that would be tough. I mean, a jury in Connecticut, a liberal state, I mean, you know, who knows what they might rule. They might rule for $1 billion for those parents. I don't know. Who could predict? And I guess maybe that was too big a risk to take. But it just, that's what I find frustrating about that. I was going to also talk about, see if I had anything other that I was forgetting to talk about here tonight. Joe Rogan. You guys have probably heard about this. Joe Rogan had a lot of, he's a super popular podcast, had a lot of different subject matter, but Joe Rogan gets COVID last summer or something like that. And then he takes ivermectin and he's along with monoclonal antibodies, and he recovers in 3 days from the Delta variant. And, then he talked on his show about, then he, on his show, he has the guy from CNN, I don't know if it was some Gupta guy or whatever, I forget the name of this doctor, medical correspondent for CNN, but who he has him on his podcast and says, you know, your network says I was taking a horse dewormer. I wasn't taking a horse dewormer. I was prescribed ivermectin by a doctor. It's made for human beings. And, you know, this, I forget the name of the guy that was this Indian doctor that was on his show. But, and then they said, yeah, they shouldn't have said that. And so Joe Rogan's, his podcast, like, really punched through the narrative. And Joe Rogan, not being a political guy, he's not Ron Johnson. He's not, you know, Rand Paul, he's not Ted Cruz. So being a non-political kind of person, his messaging really, and having such a large listener audience to his podcast, he really punched through a lot of the narrative. And liberals hate it when their narrative gets punched through, especially by someone who, because liberals are used to lockstep obedience to their narrative. The liberal media is used to lockstep obedience to their narrative. They get lockstep obedience to their narrative from celebrities, from professional athletes, which are certainly a form of celebrity, from, you know, musician celebrities, you name it, they're used to lockstep obedience from them. And so with all his podcast guests and commentary about questioning the vaccines and questioning vaccine mandates and questioning the, you know, not utilizing early treatment options like ivermectin, then you've got, you know, these douchebags like, oh, who's the guy? And I don't even, Vince, see, I'm not even a, a big music guy. But the old washed up rock and roller who that wanted his music pulled off Spotify if they didn't drop Joe Rogan, Vince Young, I think it's Vince Young. And I'm like, okay, again, who's Vince Young? I've heard the name, but I couldn't even tell you any of his songs. Spotify, you know, they're not pulling Joe Rogan off the air, but Joe Rogan goes out and puts this video forward. So he's taking a lot of heat. Spotify was kind of sticking with him, but he's taking a lot of heat. So he posts a video of himself talking about the controversy Joe Rogan does. And the video post was to me very worrisome and caving, because Joe Rogan said that, you know, he plans to do more balanced content. You know, if he has someone on his show that speaks out that vaccines aren't doing what they're supposed to, or that ivermectin is not a horse dewormer, you know, he's going to have the opposing, the alternative opinion, people on his show to carry that alternative opinion. And here's the thing. When the liberal media outlets, they don't feel that obligation to have the opposing opinion. Joe, the opposing opinion is already out there in every other outlet on the media, so you don't have to do that ballot. So that was kind of a cave to me. And then Joe said that Joe Rogan, in his little video that he was putting out, said that he wants that Spotify wants to put a disclaimer before his show saying that his opinions are contrary to the medical community consensus. And Joe Rogan said that he was fine with that disclaimer. And again, I'm like, okay, Joe, to me, now he's got to save his job. Maybe this is what he has to do to save his podcast. But again, I think it's bullshit. Why do we, I say we conservatives, I don't know that Joe Rogan's a conservative, but why does anybody that disagrees with the mainstream media narrative, the liberal narrative, the present narrative, why do we allow ourselves to be scarlet lettered? I want a disclaimer before CNN's news shows. I want a disclaimer before, you know, all these mainstream media news outlets that the opinions that they're putting out there have significant disagreement in the medical community, in the scientific medical community. But Joe Rogan thinks that it's a fine compromise to let Spotify put a disclaimer before his show saying that his opinions are contrary to the medical community consensus. Now, I think Joe Rogan's listeners see right through that. But I just still don't think that we, as people who challenge the mainstream narrative, should allow ourselves so willingly to be scarlet lettered and to be disclaimered. Because again, the mainstream media should put a disclaimer before their broadcasts that say claims made about medical consensuses are not a consensus. So, I mean, I feel like it's a cave. It's not a full surrender, but I feel like it's a cave. I feel like it's appeasement. I mean, and ask Poland how well appeasement went in Europe in World War II. I mean, but disclaimers, I mean, it chips away at your message. It mitigates that your opinions, it mitigates your opinions credence. And then if you acknowledge a disclaimer is warranted, it only makes sense that your content should be limited. I mean, it just plays into the hands of the media and gives them reason to further cancel you and further censor you in the future. And I don't know. That topic's a couple weeks old, but I had it on here and I wanted to mention it, 'cause I feel like it's a cave from Joe Rogan, even though people are like, oh yeah, Joe Rogan, he's, you know, strong and standing strong. Not as strong as I'd like to see him stand, put it that way. So I think that was everything I had for the show tonight. I'm going to look one more place here and see if I did I miss anything. Talk about conservative Joe Rogan. No, I think I hit everything. So that's the show for tonight. If you guys can't tell, I'm a little bit hoarse / stuffy. I got a man cold on Tuesday night into Wednesday. I came down with a man cold, and so I just wasn't feeling the greatest. And had the sniffles earlier in the week, and then turned into a little bit of a cough by Thursday, Friday. So I feel like I'm over it. I feel like I'm almost full strength, but voice is still a little bit, nose is still a little bit stuffy, not really like mucusy stuffy, just inflammation stuffy in my My voice still hasn't returned to its normal pitch, which, although when I'm sick, I think my voice maybe sounds a little bit lower, which is probably a little bit better, radio voice than it otherwise would be. So that's the show. Great to be back on the air. Good to talk to you guys. Lon from Wausau. Good to see you. Eben from the Fox Valley. Good to see you. Tom, thanks for popping in. All you guys who catch the podcast later in the week, thank you for tuning in. Feel free to drop me an email, nick@wisconsincarry.org, and look forward to hearing your opinions, things I said in the show, comments, anything you'd like me to talk about next week, anything. I just like hearing from people. When you're banned from Fascist Book, you miss the interactions that you had, and so it's great to hear from people, even if it's just to say hi. So you guys have a great week. Carry on and be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.